providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to shift our focus a little bit for the remainder of this show as we are chatting with Jayant Bhandari, private investor and consultant to a lot of well-known investors in the resource space. Now, Jayant, we're not going to belabor the point that the precious metal stocks and commodity stocks pretty much across the board are just getting hammered. We're going to follow up on a conversation we had about a month ago, featured again on a weekend show. We were talking about jurisdictions. We went through a number of jurisdictions, mostly focused in North America and bleeding a little bit into Mexico. That took up our whole time. So now we're going to shift our focus, continuing south in now South America, more Latin America. We have received a number of emails asking for some more thoughts on Australia, but we're working through that. In all fairness, we just don't isolate different areas in Australia all that much, but maybe we should. Let's get to Latin America, and let's start with Chile, because the recent news out of Chile regarding Rio 2 that essentially is having their project, I guess, shut down, or at least pretty heavily on pause here. This is putting a bit of hesitancy in investors even looking at projects in Chile, especially advanced projects. Now, Jayant, just outside of that Rio 2 news, how are you viewing Chile as a jurisdiction currently?
Well, so let me start with saying something politically incorrect, Corey. From whatever I have read, watched of Pinochet, I've always thought that he was someone who did a lot of good to Chile. He made it possible for Chile to become one of the best countries in Latin America. Now, he was, of course, a dictator. He killed a lot of people. But given the alternatives that Chile had at that point of time, it seems to me that he was actually a good person, a decent person to have for what else was available. Now, he left in place a capitalist constitution for Chile, and that constitution is likely on its way out, which means that private property is not going to be as respected as it is now, and Chile will continue to lose its prominence as a destination for investors. I know several people who had moved to Chile about 10 years back, Canadians and American friends of mine who moved to Chile to live in Chile, and they are all back to North America today because they have started to realize that the bad elements in the society are starting to assert their power in that society. So that is, in my view, a big problem for Chile. It is no longer going to be a prime place to invest for investors, given that the current president is a leftist and the constitution is very likely to get seriously compromised over the next couple of years.
Yeah, Jayant, it's kind of a mess. And what's interesting about Chile is it used to be, on the Fraser Institute, one of the best jurisdictions to operate in. But in February of this year, I mean, just in 2022, the Chile Assembly debated nationalizing their copper mines. And we've got some of the biggest copper mines on the planet operating in Chile. It's one of the number one countries for copper mining, BHP, Anglo American, Glencore, Antofagasta, big companies. And then just in July, they decided to change the taxes on copper mining and reform that system and the royalties. So it's one of those things where if they want foreign investment, they're doing a lot of things to crush any interest in foreign investment. And Peru is right on their tail. And we're seeing the same thing in Colombia and Ecuador. So when you look at Latin America, in particular South America, all of these leftist governments are now leaning towards nationalization, leaning towards higher taxation, and there's a lot of local groups and organized groups pushing back on new mines and permits. So what do you think of this trend we're seeing in Latin America?
Well, and this trend, Shad, will continue. Remember that America historically has been a force behind stopping degeneration of Latin America into leftism. Now America itself is becoming woke and leftist. So America no longer has the either the intention or an interest to stop the slide of Latin America towards leftism and wokeism. And the end result will be that I cannot see how this degeneration towards leftism and wokeism in Latin America can be stopped right now.
That doesn't sound very positive for resource stocks or for investors looking for opportunities in Latin America. That sounds like money could pretty quickly dry up for a lot of these companies.
Not necessarily, Corey, because you always invest from the point of view of whether you can get a return from your investment. What you are going to do going forward is to pay less for those properties. And when you pay less for those properties, your profitability will be lower, but you will have paid much lower for those properties anyway. And that is how you invest in many of these countries in let's say, sub-Saharan Africa. So you just pay a lot lower price for those properties. Now, the local people and the government think that by being more difficult, they can extract more value from investors. But quite in contrast, what they end up doing is that they are end up destroying values of the projects in their countries. But what can we do? We are offered lemon. We better make lemonade from it.
That's true, Giant. Sometimes you can make lemonade out of the lemons. And to your point, you know, a lot of times, the West African companies trade at a huge discount to, let's say, North American companies, but a lot of their projects are moving forward. The trend I'm seeing personally when I look across the board in Latin America is their projects are not moving forward. They're not getting the mines built. And if a company comes in and spends $50 million, $100 million, several hundred million dollars, and then gets their project blocked, it doesn't encourage new investment to come in. But we noted one thing off mic before we started recording that's interesting. The countries that were considered kind of the worst countries in Latin America, like your Argentinas or Brazils, don't look as bad as they once did. In fact, some of them have slight improvements in compared to the countries that were the favored countries kind of falling. So is there just that teeter-totter where some countries are at their max optimism and they're going to naturally fall, and some are at their max pessimism and they can actually only go up from where they're at?
Well, Shad, I was talking with a company with a gold project in Brazil, and they were telling me that their profitability actually has improved with time because Brazilian currency has fallen a lot. Also, I completely agree with you that Argentina and Brazil, which did not look like good places to invest in, have, compared to other Latin American countries, started to look good. That is not necessarily because Argentina and Brazil have improved their profiles, but it's because these countries haven't really worsened much with time. Although I might add that I'm hearing that Bolsonaro might be on his way out in the next election. And if that happens, then Brazil could go very rapidly leftist again.
So the trend sounds like it's in the wrong direction. What about Colombia and their recent election? We've seen a lot of stocks that have been in Colombia. In all fairness, it seems like it's been very difficult to get really much work done on Colombian projects. But now with Petro elected, seems like the attitude's even worse in Colombia.
Yes, and that could harm, I think, the early stage companies more than the mining companies themselves. At the end of the day, these leftist, communist, socialist dictators, they still want tax money. So if a company is producing and giving them taxes, they might let these companies continue to run. But moreover, there's always, these are the communist leaders are not necessarily communists. They are always in bed with bad elements in the societies, and things continue to work the way they used to. And these communist dictators are usually not very skilled at imposing communism. They don't really understand how their society works, how the institutions work. So they are not in a position often to impose an immediate harm on companies that are actually producing, who are producing something right now. So I am less concerned about mining companies in Colombia, but I'm certainly more concerned about early stage companies in Colombia.
Well, Giant, what about a country like Ecuador, which had a terrible reputation, let's say 10 years ago, because they had reversed all of their mining codes, the same things we're seeing in Chile and Peru and Colombia right now. They had done all the wrong things. discouraged investment. But then they flipped the script and they turned into suggesting they were pro-mining and it was going to be a new government and new pro-mining stances. And that went well for a couple years. But the last couple years, it's kind of fallen on deaf ears. A lot of their projects have gotten stalled, blocked permits, and not just by the government. But in this particular question, how important is the social license? Because it's local organized groups, sometimes very well-funded lobbyist groups that are blocking these mines and causing a stir. There's riots going on and protests all over Ecuador right now. How important is it for companies to get a handle on the social license?
Well, that is what exactly the problem seems to be in Ecuador, because the government seems to be in favor of mining companies going ahead, but many local tribes don't want that to happen. And that's where companies come in conflict with the locals, and locals don't allow these projects to get off the ground. But again, I am invested in a couple of companies in Ecuador. I think they are cheap enough that the risks have been discounted in the share prices of those companies. So I'm not worried too much about Ecuador right now, but always remember that Ecuador has historically been a leftist country. It has historically been a very backward country, and there's no way out for this, that society. It is going to continue to become a leftist country. But as an investor, I am only looking for the next 5 to 10 years.
So, Giant, what do you look for in some of these countries, like especially Peru, where it seems like it can take forever to get drill permits, Ecuador, Colombia? They all seem to be going in the wrong direction. But if you're looking for investments over the next 5 to 10 years, what's critical in your eyes in terms of what companies have, whether it be permits, money, projects? What do you look for?
Well, so let's talk about, I'm not going to name that company in Colombia, but this company is a producing company, and the management are not the best management in the sector, but then they are in a position to twist the arms of political leaders to get their work done. They are in a position that politicians cannot really trouble this management too much. As a result, I feel better about that management, despite that I don't like the personalities in that management. The second thing I like is that how much tax they are paying. If they are paying a substantial amount of tax, it is very important for any kind of, whether it's leftist or conservative government, to continue to let those companies work, because they are getting a lot of tax money from those companies. Now, early stage companies don't benefit the government in terms of taxes. So they are the companies that can easily suffer. But my guess is that mining companies that are actually giving a good amount of taxes to the government should be all right.
Well, Giant, just along that line of thinking and sticking with the Latin American theme, when you go into Central America, most countries are completely uninvestable. If you're looking at Panama or El Salvador, or Belize, you know, Costa Rica, nobody really wants to operate there. But there are two Central American countries, part of Latin American mining, and that's Guatemala and Nicaragua. And it seems like the tale of two countries. And one is, and it's really around this theme of taxes. In Nicaragua, there's two operating miners, Mako Mining and Caliber Mining, that are doing great. They're generating taxes, and the government's permitting them quickly. They're getting their projects going quickly. In contrast, Guatemala seems to block all their projects. Pan America's Escobal has been sitting dormant for the last 5 to 6 years with no action. Bluestone's having a hard time getting their project permitted and up and running. And we just saw a few issues at one of our sponsor companies, Volcanic Gold, on their early stage drilling. So wouldn't you think more countries would look at what Nicaragua's doing or some of the successful countries and say, we want this tax money coming in. We want the jobs. We want the foreign investment. And the companies are happy to pay the taxes to pay to play. Wouldn't you think more countries would take that model on of supporting the mining industry to bring in taxes?
Well, you know, if the companies are paying taxes already, it's much easier for politicians to let them continue to produce. But if they're going to start giving taxes 4 years from now or 3 years from now, a lot of politicians are not interested, because they would be helping the next group of politicians, the next the politicians that come from the next election cycle to benefit from those taxes. So they have no interest in necessarily permitting companies that will come in the next cycle of elections. So my guess is that, you know, and I'm not a big fan of Nicaragua or Guatemala anyway, but if you are producing good taxes and if you continue to have a good relationship with politicians, then you continue to stay unharmed as long as you continue paying your taxes.
Giant, where do you get your news that you use to judge just how healthy or, quite frankly, investable a country is? Because you don't want to listen, I don't think, to management, because management, whatever country they're in, they're going to put a positive spin on it. And I think a lot of newsletter writers, they're extremely biased too, because they want to be part of a bigger movement. They want to tie into one country and really usually hang their hat on that country, hopefully performing. So I find them also biased. What do you do to filter through all this noise and figure out where actually could be investable?
Well, so again, going back to this Colombian company that I was mentioning, which I don't want to name, they are a company that's producing a good profit for me, and they have a lot of cash in the bank, and they have projects elsewhere as well. And if I ignore completely the value of their Colombian project, I still get an upside in owning that company. And the project that is making money for me is a significantly good amount of money that pretty much justifies the company's valuation by itself. So that is how I look at things. I want to see what is the worst case scenarios with these companies. What happens if I completely lose a certain project? What happens if one thing that I'm most afraid of goes out of existence? Would I still have enough value underpinning my share price? And if I have that, then I'm more than happy to invest in such companies. And if I have an upside with what I'm reasonably confident about, then I am less fearful about investing in them. Now, what happens with the market is that a lot of people start selling their shares without trying to understand that they don't do a valuation on what. They look at one aspect of these companies and start selling their shares. And that is where I actually benefit from accumulating those companies and hope that I can make money over the next 6 months or couple of years.
John, I think that's a great point, because while we're focused on jurisdictions in this interview, there's still the team, the project, the ability to execute. There's a lot of things that factor into evaluation, not just the jurisdiction. But I guess just one last thing to maybe touch on is, how important is it for you that when you bring in an expat country, like you have Canadians or Americans or British or Australians working in some of these more exotic, you know, locations, how important is it for them to have the local teams in place that have the political understanding and the support of the communities versus coming in and trying to put their own people in? How do you weigh that at all when you're looking at investing in companies, the spread of their local workers and management versus international?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's extremely crucial. If someone from Canada goes to a new country without really understanding that country properly and thinks that it can make money investing in that company, it isn't going to happen. I want people who are well versed in the local culture and local politics, people who understand and have relationships with local leaders, local native leaders and local politicians. Now, that is not always an honest relationship, but that's something you have to have if you are investing in these countries. And I'm always looking for how good the management that I'm investing in is at implementing projects in those countries.
So, Giant, wrap us up then. Quick comment in terms of what are you doing with your portfolio? As I mentioned, the onset of the first segment when we started recording here, look, the resource stocks have been crushed. Big guys and little guys, especially the little guys and the mid-tiers. Everyone keeps trying to look for a bottom, and unfortunately, where they're looking just keeps getting a little bit lower. What are you doing? Are you investing right now? Are you sitting on cash? Are you rotating money? Just give us some insights, please.
Well, over the last time when I talked with you, I told you that I did not see gold to fall anymore. I did not think venture exchange would fall anymore, and it has, of course, fallen a lot over the last 1 month. What I have done over the last few weeks is that I have sold a lot of companies that I did not think had enough upside, and other bad companies, and I have accumulated all that cash, and I'm investing in companies that I think have good upsides. So that's what I'm currently doing. I'm rotating my money, but I'm almost 100% invested at this point of time.
All right, Giant, thank you for your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show. As always, you can keep in touch with Shad and I through email. My email is fleck@kereport.com. Shad's is shad@kereport.com. We're going to be back with you early next week, covering a lot of resources, some more macro stuff, and who knows, hopefully a more positive vibe, as this early on in summer has already been really tough for investors, especially the investors in the resource sector, as it has just continued to trend lower. But hey, there are some, I guess, good companies and some good deals for some of these stocks. But again, just been a tough year so far broadly for these markets. Everybody, thanks again for tuning in. Hope you all have a great rest of your week.